Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
One app is life.
It's not the one you should be underestimating.
It is.
Sasquatch, Godzilla, King Kong, Loch Ness.
We rap nerd now here, right?
Like, I can tell you were a nerd.
It's primal.
And that's raw. Carhartt girl.
Speaking of sneaky big tits,
are you out there fucking?
I'm doing that.
Years ago, I booked a millionaire Griffin. This was years ago, bro. Years ago.
Cypher Sounds. Peter Rosenberg. One app is life.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
What's
good,
happening?
Good evening.
Wait a minute. Wait.
Wait, yours is last. You jump in last.
Wait.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good
What's
night.
What's happening?
Right, oh, it's still too early.
It's fine. It's Muggs, baby.
Yo, Soul Assassins taking over Juan Epp. DJ Muggs is here. What's cracking, Muggs?
Soul Assassins, baby. What's happening, Rosenberg?
Soul Assassins 3, Death Valley.
That's right.
Oh,
you're the movie.
Oh, plus a movie, a Death Valley movie.
Yeah, Death Valley is the movie with the soundtrack, with the score that came along with it, that came out first.
First of all, I got a lot.
Yeah.
First of all, Soul Assassins, top 3 hip-hop name ever. I mean, when I first heard that term, I was like, that is one of the dopest names. You know, with hip-hop, everything got a name, you know what I mean? Soul Assassins always was like, that's one of
who
the
Who came up with Soul Assassins? Names.
I did.
That was you from Jump?
Yeah, from Jump, 1992, man.
92.
Yeah, I had a crew. I had a bunch of, you know, like I had a couple rappers in the crew, but I had a bunch of homies that was on the streets, that was doing cars, that was doing graffiti, that was doing art, that was doing tattoos, that was taking photos, that was making videos. And one time I had hooked this photographer up and I gave him a career and I hooked a video dude up, his first video.
Yeah.
I gave him a career.
Yeah.
I asked him for a favor and it's like $35,000, $75,000. I was like, man, fuck y'all motherfuckers.
Wow.
Homie. Take the pictures from now on. Homie, shoot the videos from now on. And I realized at that point, well, this is build our own economy with our friends.
Right.
And let's like, you got a dream, you got ambitions, you got goals. Well, let's pool our resources and bring each other up and look out for each other. And that's when the crew started.
So DJ Muggs, let's see what I can remember. Originally from Queens.
That's right.
Moved out to LA because of 783?
No, I moved out to live with my mother. I moved from Jackson Heights to a place called Bell Gardens, which is Southeast LA.
Mm. What age?
I was 12.
But the Queens is still there.
Yeah, I be in Queens all the time.
All the time.
All my family's there. My mom got 8 brothers and sisters, so I got 30 cousins over there still.
And then, so you go to LA.
It's crazy.
You're in a rap group.
783.
And whatever, it puts out an album, whatever it does. And then Cypress Hill.
Right.
So you got Cypress
By the way,
Hill.
You produced the whole 783 album?
No, I didn't produce none of it, actually. I produced the first remix. I was the DJ. I had all the ideas.
Right.
You know, I was 18. And it was a $150,000 record budget, and they wasn't going to give it to an 18-year-old kid who didn't produce nothing. So Joe the Butcher, who mixed all the Schooly D records and shit, from Philly, he produced the whole record. And not
okay.
Wow.
Man, I got an 8-year college education in a month in Philly with Joe the Butcher.
So Joe the Butcher is affiliated with, was affiliated with Rough House.
Yeah, he owned Rough House.
He owned Rough House.
That's how Cypress got onto Rough House. See, we didn't even ask a question yet. We already got Jefferson.
But you know what? Thank you, Muggs. Muggs, thank you. This was great. We already accomplished what we needed to.
I was like, Joe, I got this other group. It was before 783. I was down with Cypress, right? So I would send him my demos. And he was like, all right, cool.
Keep working. Down with Cypress before 783.
Yeah, we just we wasn't in the music business. That was just the hood.
Right.
So I would send Joe the demos. He's like, keep working.
Yeah.
Keep working. Then one day I did the song Real Estate and I sent him, he's like, yo, what's that?
Real Estate, really? That was the one that caught his attention.
First demo that we made that sounded like a record.
Right.
All the other ones was kind of garbage. Garbage.
So Real Estate, and that's the first joint that actually ended up making the album?
No, that was the first one that like us, like amongst our crew was like, yo, that sounds like a record. So that gave us that spark. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We kept working, but I think
this joint here,
Real Estate, Killer Man, Light Another. That was a demo. Those three songs and a song called Caliente, a Spanish one that never made the record.
Ignorant question, Mug. Sorry. What's your background? What's your ethnic background?
Italian.
You're Italian.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't remember.
You know that. I'm assuming you're a Jets fan.
Man, I'm a Raider fan and a Met fan.
Yeah.
Because my grandmother grew up right by Shea Stadium in Flushing. My mother's from Naples, Italy.
I admit it.
That's real Italian. So, I just want to listen.
You didn't know, did you, Emilio? What? You didn't know Bugs Italian, did you?
Yeah, Tony touched on me.
Okay.
Tony.
So we got, just to run through a couple things, then we'll go into a little detail. You got Cypress Hill, you got House of Pain, Funk Dubious, Psycho Realm.
Good call,
The Hooligans, is Alchemist and fucking
Scott Conn.
Yes, sure. Good memory, Scythe.
What else? Is there any other thing I'm missing? Soul Assassin albums, of course.
Soul Assassin Radio.
Where you had the illest song with RZA, like, because you and RZA, you must have came from the same planet somewhere with the type of beats early on. The first Cypress Hill album means so much to me, bro. It's the first record my mom bought me as a Christmas gift. She bought me the actual vinyl. That album to this day, man. All the other albums, no matter how big Cypress Hill has gotten and fire music and all the tours you did and all the fucking Lollapaloozas and whatever you did.
Everything.
That first album, though, man, is my shit. Mm. Stone is the Way of the Walk. Latin Lingo, funky
Feel One,
funky feel one instrumental. Sometimes I play the instrumental and just play the, because you had the James Brown bass line first.
Yeah, I love this motherfucker. Because it was on the 12-inch. It was the A side.
It was the A side.
Killer Man was the B side.
Yeah, Killer Man's the B side.
You know what they said?
How
say,
I
right?
Could Just Killer Man was the B side.
The B side wins again every motherfucking time in the 90s.
Yep.
The label was trying to get that lick and get that money and get that hit, but it wasn't happening. It was the B side.
And by the way, for my money, When the Shit Goes Down is the winner too on Insane in the Brain and When the Shit Goes Down.
So now you do.
I didn't know this story about you. I didn't know that this was that your mom bought it for you.
Oh, no. And it has nothing to do. Has nothing to do with it being like Latinos or anything like that. Like, it's just one of the greatest hip hop albums ever made. What year did it come out?
91.
July 91, bro. And that Killer Man with the video, which everybody was confused. Because there's a Cypress Hill in New York.
Absolutely.
You shot the video in New York. Everybody's like, where are they from?
There's a Cypress Hills in the Bronx.
Yep.
There's a Cypress Hill Projects. There's a Cypress Hills on the border of Queens and Brooklyn.
Yep.
You want to know the ill shit? I was on tour with Naughty by Nature, following their bus around with a van. We was on tour. We had just did BET Rap City. I think it was in Washington, D.C.
D.C. at the time,
We had 2 days off on tour. That 2 days, we shot Killer Man. And Hand on the Pump. We shot Killer Man.
Hand on the Pump.
Us three with the cameraman. And
who was the cameraman?
It was Shady. Shady, who did Killer Man.
I met that guy. He does Shady like sound
Perez.
Now.
Shady Perez did a bunch of videos back then. He did, so we did Killer Man. It was me, Sin, Be Real, him, and the playback. We drove to Washington Heights. We did it at Astor Square with Tim Dog, Q.
Yep.
Q-Tip, everybody showed up. Then the next day, we did Red Hook. We did Hand on the Pump and Red Hook
on the
piers. And that was we did in the weekend. So you saw us, the videos in New York, the Cypress is in New York. I'm from here. Like, the beats sound like they're from New York, but the slang and the dress,
the energy
is from West Coast.
Yeah. Such an ill combo.
Yeah.
Hand on the Pump is fire. Hand on the Glock is fire. Latin Lingo remix. There's so much, bro. You got so much shit.
Well, and by the way, I mean, you can argue Pigs is fire, by the way. And you can argue that Black Sunday is just as good as the first album.
Well, just the way Black Sunday starts.
That's, you know, do you realize that this record.
All I wanted was a Pepsi.
Do you realize that this record, I didn't smoke weed until I was 25 years old. I never smoked a joint.
You had to go back.
And to this day, I'm not even a big weed head. I get paranoid. I smoke occasionally. But this song, I didn't even need to know anything about what weed actually felt like to know that musically, weed felt like this.
It's like we got motherfuckers high without getting them high.
Yeah, you didn't have to smoke to get high.
I never smoked, and I was definitely high listening to Cypress. I want to get and then, okay, high. Just to nerd out just a little bit, because I remember there was a maybe it was the Source. High. I don't remember what magazine, but you had an article in there, and you were talking about like four tracks and whatever equipment you used. And I used to cut that article out, and I was like, I gotta get these things.
Yeah.
What were you using on the first album?
We had the SP-1200, which didn't have a lot of sampling time, right? So we had a Tascam 4-track, which was the cassette 4-track. So I'd lay the beat down on track A, then I'd get with the vocals on track B, the second track. Then the third track, I'd lay all the little sounds for the rest of the sounds for the beat. Then the fourth track, I lay the overdubs of the vocals, and we bounce it all down.
This is for the demo, or this is how you made the album?
At the crib. So at the crib, we'd be like, okay, this song's dope. Let's record this in the studio.
Right, if it wasn't
a dope demo, we wouldn't take it into
the
studio.
Right, so you made it at home first.
Yeah.
Boom. So the first Cypress album was SP-12?
SP-12, the whole album.
The whole album?
So is the second
album. No way.
The whole
book.
Why do you not believe this? I've explained.
Sometimes, check it. When I would make the beat, I would lay the, because you only had 10 seconds of sampling time. Right?
Yeah.
So I would lay the beat down on track A. Then I'd get the next sounds on another disc for the SP, and I'd lay those on track two on the four track. Then I'd get another disc, and lay the sounds on track three. Then when I went in the studio, I had the song worked out with all the sounds.
I can't believe you made that album on an SP-12.
Why, Syph? Because it's too complicated?
It was that record took 3 years. Our first album was 3 years in the studio.
Sheesh. Like,
that was our whole life.
Yeah.
Whenever we got time to get in the studio and shit, we got in, but it wasn't like go in and work. We didn't have we were just trying to get in.
But Syph, explain to the layman why it's surprising.
I don't know. My ears just trained for this kind of stuff. So SP-12 people are, let's say, Large Professor, definitely Pete Rock. Pete Rock's heavy SP-1200. Then you got DJ Premier's an NPC guy, RZA ASR-10. The type of style, the beats that you were making doesn't sound like that typical SP-12 sound. That's how talented you were to like find all these different little sounds.
Shit, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. No, I was just awkward and just doing my version of how does this shit work.
Yeah.
Well, where was there, what genre?
Real quick, let me just say one thing. The bridge of how I can just kill a man is not truncated all the way properly. So it's like,
it was good as weed. There was a lot of shit not truncated.
It's so fire, but it's like microseconds off. And I wonder, would it have been as good if it wasn't off? Because that's what made it the flavor. You know what I'm saying? And then you can tell.
Those are those intangibles that make great shit great, right?
Oh, I want to play the bridge.
It's not technical. But that beat was actually another beat for another song I never made. And I used it because it wasn't a dope song.
This?
I put a part of this in the song. That part.
And then another change. When you come into this verse, it's different too.
It's different.
When the drums come in right here too.
Drums back.
So then it goes to the carnival music. It's gonna be a long time
before I finish one of the men. You're out of your mind. This guy's a psycho.
I just like back in them, you know, songs, like songwriting, they had bridges in songs and hooks and D sections. And so I always put bridges in.
Yeah, a lot of hip hop, when they first started making hip hop that we love, it was just verse, hook, verse, hook, verse, hook. You made a lot of different little, Wu-Tang too, because there was so many people, he had to like put some changes in it, but you made it for like this group that was just two guys rhyming, and you put all, it was like the beat was a part of the group. The production was part of the group, not just a beat maker.
That's a good point.
You got a bridge, it took you away. It was like a whole nother hook. It took you away for a second.
Yeah.
It comes back, and then when it comes back, it's banging again.
It's crazy. Two things are blowing my mind right now. Number one, I still can't believe that Muggs is not Latino. Did you at some point start to, in some ways, identify?
No, he's honorary, bro.
Yeah, like, are you to the point of honorary where it's like, culturally, that must be interesting.
Man, I'm just a product of my environment. Like, I grew up with Puerto Ricans and Dominicans and Italians and Jewish people and Irish and just the Greeks, like in Queens where I came from. It was everybody. When I went to LA, it was black, white, and Mexican. That was it. I was like, white boy. I was like, the fuck is that? Right. I didn't know what a Mexican was. You know what I'm saying? At the time. Like,
right.
We're coming from Queens, too.
It didn't happen until later on, like in the late 80s.
New York, Mexicans
started coming here.
Yeah.
So I was like, where the fuck am I? So I'm in East LA where it's 99.9% Mexican all of a sudden when I moved there. There was no buses and no trains to get around. You was just stuck.
And they just called you white boy in the hood.
I just get for a minute until I beat their ass. And then they start calling me New York. And then
by the way, you guys did something that was good as a group. Like, I understand why you did it, and yet I have a huge pet peeve with it.
What?
I say it with all due respect. I hate the radio version of How I Could Just Kill a Man.
So do I.
Oh, I wish they'd just done the edits on it. Just so give me I. the mute.
What's that?
You know the hell with it. They changed the lyrics and I just fucking hate it.
They recorded this shit. I was in New York. That was in LA. They recorded the whole shit and I hated it. When I heard it, I was
you
like,
hate
what
it?
The fuck are you doing? No, because to get that performance we got on the
it's
record.
It's not the same performance. It's slightly
whole,
different.
And they did it all in one day. They did the whole album, the clean versions in one day.
They rushed it too.
They did the whole song over.
Yes.
Oh, not just that part.
The second verse. The second, if you go through
I know what you mean.
If you go back and play the radio version, the second he starts rapping at the beginning, you'll be like, this isn't the album.
Yeah,
all of them. The performance isn't the exact same.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. It worked out in the long run.
Yeah, it worked out. It's fine.
Now, I got to ask you, like, you guys come out, first album's a big deal in rap circles. Like, it's a rap big deal. Mm. But then Black Sunday.
Yeah.
Insane in the Brain takes you to this whole fucking other place. Did you guys have any idea that Insane in the Brain was going to be this departure that hip hop people messed with, but took you completely somewhere else?
I did not. I knew we laid the groundwork. When I could look back, in hindsight, I look back because we started doing a lot of rock and roll alternative tours. But
off,
at the time,
off the first album?
Yeah, but we was on the second stage. But already Ice-T and Ice Cube and certain motherfuckers that had the edge that could have that festival style music was doing it.
So they were already fucking with you, even pre-Black Sunday.
We was on the second stage of Lollapalooza already. You know what I mean? Now it just queued us up for the big stages and the big everything. Right. So once that came out. But when I did Insane in the Brain, I was like, the sound is, they haven't got enough of the sound of the first album yet. So if you listen to it, the breaks is the same breaks I did for Killer Man. Wow. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yep. In the third verse with the, with the fucking circus shit and all that and the bridges and everything, it's the same song format.
So we did that.
And that was some good shit. The thing was like, the crazy Insane Got No Brains, 899 the first Swan Gang. You know what I mean? It was some gang shit. That motherfuckers did different.
I know.
So that's what that was right there.
Yeah, the lyrics.
But I made the beat bouncy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was still like potholes in my lawn. If you slow it down, think about it.
Right.
It is potholes in my lawn.
You know what I'm saying?
Yo, Syf, that's crazy if you think about it. That slowed down is potholes in my lawn.
It could be. I'm a big De La Soul fan, so you know what I'm saying? Like, I love Prince Paul back then, so even when I did the kicks on Hand on the Pump, boom, boop, 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 that was fucking Gas Face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Like,
I was just learning.
I want to hear the part of, you're talking about the bridge before the third verse on Insane in the Brain?
The bridge that when the third verse starts, listen to the third verse of Killer Man. It was a carnival sound, right?
Right.
So right, here we go.
Gunshot nearby. Louis Armstrong played the trumpet.
You know what I mean?
Oh, shit. I didn't think about it that way.
Like, we knew about it, but they didn't know about this sound yet.
Right,
so
right.
Sure, like, we about to, you know,
back in.
So that to me it wasn't the best song in the album, but it was the first single.
Did you feel the difference when that song came out, how big it went?
I felt you felt it. You know what I mean? When that shit hit, you just felt the energy of the you know, being just pulling up.
It
was like, yo, fuck, all right.
God did damn. Black radio play it at all, or did it go right to like rock radio?
I don't know. I don't know what was going on. I was not even listening to radio at that time, honest to God. I stopped listening to radio. I was just
of course, and why would you? Although, except I will tell you
but
this.
I know. I don't know about New York, but I know L.A. played it. I know all the stations in L.A. played it.
New York played it. New York played it early. No, but hip-hop stations played it early, but it blew up so fast, it wasn't long.
This was in the mix show rotation in D.C. So this was late, night times in D.C., this record was playing, not in Insane in the Brain.
Living on Fat Pop.
So I got to ask you about this too. Why do you do the different version of When the Shit Goes Down on the album with that sample that doesn't exist on the real version?
I'm going to tell you right now.
Sife, do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
That
The group that we got the sample from, I think it was, the song's called Deep Gully, but at the Something Blues Band, they said we couldn't do The Shit Goes Down. They won't clear the sample. So we changed it to The Ship Goes Down.
Yeah.
But we still said ship, but you know, just
sucks. Yes.
Uh-huh. And I had to take that little piece out. That's what the lawyers were saying. Take that shit out.
Oh, because it was more than that. The whole song is them.
Mm-hmm.
That part and the other part.
Absolutely.
So they were like, okay, oh, got it. So
it was some sampling shit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, whatever. The song's banging. What you all want me to do? And I know the song's out already, so I ain't tripping. But so whatever, we got to do. Let's make it.
Right.
By the way, I like it better without the thing. In a weird way, that sound to me softens it a little bit. Gotcha. And I like how hard it is without the melodic. I don't need the melodic part in it because that shit just hits so hard. Sife, this album, though, too, in general, has got, I mean, this hits from the bottom.
Hard.
Is this Son of a Preacher, man?
It is. Yeah, I grew up with that record, man. My moms would play that shit all the time, you know, around the house and stuff, so... Later on, I was just like, oh, shit, let's try this.
Wait, Sife, this is one of those TikTok moments. Did you know that this song is actually Son of a Preacher Man? You may remember it from movies like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
What's considered to be the... Is I Want to Get High the biggest weed anthem for the weed heads, or is Hits from the Bong even bigger?
Wow.
I know.
Good fucking question.
Yeah.
Because they're both like iconic weed anthems.
I'm going to guess Hits from the Bong.
Yeah, then both of them. I don't even know, man. Both of them motherfuckers got their own thing. One turns it up. It starts from the beginning. But Hits from the Bong will pick the whole shit up. It got that bang like it's an up-tempo joint, you know what I mean?
By the way, I hope Muggs hits us with, after I found out he's not Mexican, he's Italian. Next minute he goes, but I've never smoked weed, so I don't know.
No, I never smoke weed. Come on, man. I hate weed.
You know what might be Sife? This, you could argue this is the, you could argue, in my opinion, this is also the best song on this album.
Hits from the Bong?
No, this. Wait for it. You'll hear it in a second, Sife. Muggs hears it already. I hear it. The people hear it.
It's a good one.
Woo! Ain't Going Out Like That is...
It's a good one.
Is there all your sounds...
Wait, you like this album better than the first? I'm telling you, me and him are like probably 3 years apart.
And there's a difference.
So I'm like Low End Theory, always, he's Midnight Marauder. Now I'm seeing it again.
Yeah.
I'm Cypress Hill, you're Black Sunday.
Gotcha.
I was a little older. I was becoming a teenager. So like that difference, you know what I mean? There's a difference in how you take an album when you're 11 versus 14.
Yeah,
you know?
100%.
Yeah.
And like this shit, I was around, you know, I was a young teenager when this became a huge thing. And I remember Cypress was one of those groups that started getting the white kids who weren't really down with hip hop to start being curious about hip hop. Of course, I found it annoying at the time.
Well, that was great.
But it made you very rich. So I'm glad it worked out.
That's what Run DMC did. That's what the Beastie Boys did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what LL did. And that's what I think that was a lot of the shit we was inspired by those motherfuckers right there. Public Enemy. Anything Molly Mall did, of course. All that shit was...
But by the way, you
did it in a way where... You didn't lose any respect from the core hip hop audience. You know what I mean?
Nah, because we was just making hip hop.
Yeah.
I didn't think we was gonna make a lot of money. I didn't even give a. I never thought about money. I had a good job working construction, making $300 a week. I was good. You know what I mean?
Great.
And I was like, man, if I sell 100,000 records and I got respect like KRS-One,
right?
I won.
You won.
And when we came out, we was doing shows with KRS, killing it side by side. I was like, that's it.
Wow.
I hit the fucking boom.
Well, and that's first album. You were already there.
First album. I'm good. Like everything I dreamed about. And we competing with the big motherfuckers, big dogs. Like, boom, we right there banging on everybody.
And then you start producing like Funk Dubious, right? Like those beats.
Those were the little homies though. See, Sun was just down with 783.
Right.
T-Bone was down with Cypress from the block.
Yeah.
And Ralph M was the homie that was DJing for Kid Frost. We was like, let's put a group together. Let's put the homies together. And B-Real had a song we didn't use called The Funk Dubious.
That's what I was going to ask you.
So that's how
it was. Was it a song that you didn't use for Cypress?
From the same beat we used for A to the K. It was a song called The Funk Dubious.
Oh, man.
So that ended up being them. It was just like, yo, we're here. Oh, let's make, those are the three homies. Let's make them, they rap and let's make them a group. It was just on some shit like that.
And then what about House of Pain?
we didn't grow up with them and know them. I knew this girl I was dating, and I would go over to her house, and her cousin was DJ Lethal's girlfriend, so he would be right there. And I was like, I'm not coming over. Is this motherfucker going to be over there again?
Yeah.
Then I go over there, and there's Everlast, and I go, now I got to deal with this motherfucker. But I mean, he was cool, and I kicked it a few times with him. And I was like, I come to the crib and do a song with me. And then we did this song called I Don't Give a Fuck. It was whack. And then I was like, all right, come back over. I got this song. It's called a song called Jump Around. I had Son do it, Daddy Freddy, done for a bunch of motherfuckers, but they didn't kill it. So they didn't
own
it.
So you tried to do that song with other people.
Absolutely. Because I had the hook and the concept already. I was big on concept and hooks.
Right.
Once you got that.
Yeah,
you
know Muggs, I mean? We know that. We listen to your music.
So I'm saying,
obviously. You're very good at it.
Well, one of the things now I've been telling
you. I was big on concepts.
You know, everybody's writing bars now, but people forgot about songwriting.
Right.
You know, going back to songwriting.
100%.
Getting the hooks, getting the concept, and add the lyrics. So I had to join. I had to jump around, done it. Everlast came. He wrote some shit. I was like, that's cool. But that one little two bars, write the whole song like that.
Right.
Went back in and he added, I came to get down. I came to get down.
So did you ever give the beat to Be Real?
I was about to ask that. Why not Cypress Hill?
Here's what happened. We had just finished Black Sunday. I mean, the first album before Black Sunday. And I played the beat for Be Real and he rhymed on it. Shit was ill as fuck. But I don't think we worked different back then. You didn't just work like we work now all the time. So Be Real was just like, man, I don't feel like writing no more. We just finished the first
album. Yeah, he's tired, whatever.
You know, it was different.
So there's a world in which, if it goes different, there's a world in which Jump Around is a Cypress Hill record off the next album?
Jump Around, Check Yourself, Tear This Motherfucker Up by Cube, all the shit I did in first year during that. Yeah, all that shit.
Okay, so Be Real was like, I just wrote a whole bunch of shit. The album's out. I still want to make beats. Songs.
Really process that.
Yeah.
Imagine if Black Sunday, the two first singles, were Insane in the Brain and Jump Around. And
Jump Around.
It would have been ugly.
It would have been. Yo, it was enough that.
No, but Jump Around is such a classic. But the Irish part of it, I think, even made it even more. It made it even more than what could have been with Cypress.
You know, the ill part about that is Everlast was just Everlast. And I was like, yo, the Everlast thing, bro, motherfucker, seeing you with the slick back hair, I got the knack. Yep. First impressions of motherfucker. Go back and rethink this shit. And he came back like 3 days later with Danny Boy. He goes, yo, we got a group. We're going to call it the House of Pain. It's all Irish. And what it was Everlast was sleeping on Danny Boy's couch, and Danny Boy was Irish. And he had a punk rock group called House of Pain.
House of Pain, yeah, I remember that.
So the whole shit, he came back, and then I shopped a deal. Flex wanted to sign it at Priority. $65,000. I was like, and Special Ed was there. I was like, nah, I'm good, 65 G's. And then Monica Lynch from Tommy Boy. Wait, well, I want to sign you. Come talk to me. She was like, this reminds me of my brothers. I was like, what do you mean? She's like, my brothers go to the church and they go to the bar and get drunk and get in fights.
Yeah.
And she gave him $250,000, signed us. And then we got the same management, the same dude who did our pictures, and the same motherfucker that did the Killer Man video, Shady Perez.
And did you do, wow, you did the whole album?
I did like 80%. Yeah. Lethal did the rest.
You did, did the rest. Yeah. What's the other big song on there? What's the first song on that album?
Shamrock, the intro song.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I listened to this album, which, by the way, underrated album.
Bro, beats on there is fire.
Well, you know, House of Pain, obviously.
But Funk Dubious too, man. The funkiest.
Young Son.
Fire, man.
You're thinking of, you're not thinking of Shamrocks and Shenanigans?
No.
You said literally the first song?
Maybe it's not the first song.
Put your head out. You didn't put your head out.
Yeah, I did put your head out. That was one of the first demos. You remember that shit? Hey, you know what this was?
Spread love.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Those drums. Yep. Spread love drums.
Did you do Who's the Man or no?
I did not. But it sounds like I did. Yeah, they was all on my shit. I was like, y'all need to go get your own style, man. Get off my dick. Weirdos. I mean,
what do you expect, Muggs? If you put your shit, put them on. Of course, they're gonna try.
They didn't know better. I'm not mad at them.
How did you feel about this, Muggs?
You know, that was the day of the remix. So you came out with a banger or something that wasn't, you added a remix to extend the life of the song. You know what I mean? And to get it on the mix shows or wherever it wasn't going at the time. So
Yeah, this was probably a cheat code because the song had gotten so big that mix shows were probably kind of done with it because it was so commercial.
But it started off in the mixes. It started off on all the mix shows. It started off underground. Then it took off.
Then it took off. And then this gave it new life though, right?
It gave it brand new life. And that's what remixes were for back then. They gave songs brand new lives and gave them legs. You know what I mean?
Did you deal with Pete at all when he did the remix or is no, just he was, took the acapellas?
That was Tommy Boy. Tommy Boy did all that.
But did they ask you guys for approval?
I think they asked House of Pain. I think they asked me. I think I heard it afterwards. But I love the record.
Yeah, it fucking came out.
Yeah, dope as fuck.
Of your outside production, what do you hang your hat on the most? I mean, obviously Jump Around is up there. It's done quite well for you.
Man.
Let's see if Spotify has a DJ Muggs playlist.
I like, man, tear this motherfucker up with Cube. What me and Rock do? The Shit I'm On. Oh, me and G-Rap. What was the G-Rap one on Soul Assassins too? Real,
it's, bro. You did too much music.
Yeah, I can't remember.
You gotta remember this shit.
She rap on some shit though.
Oh shit!
Oh, that shit.
You don't stop. You keep.
Yeah, just I'm staying over there on Ludlow and Riverton, so I walked by today by the Paul's Boutique spot with the shit, and I saw
he's on the street, the street sign,
and I was like, man, how fucking influential, how big were the Beastie Boys, yo? They was the biggest shit in the world. Nobody knows about it no more. It's weird, right? You know what I mean?
Well, no, like
we know, but motherfuckers don't know.
Yeah, it's if you're at a certain age, Beastie Boy means everything to you, and the young people like don't even know it exists.
Zero significance.
It's really weird.
It
didn't
even happen.
The lack of people going back with hip hop is really disturbing to me.
What do you mean?
Like young kids that don't like, it's at your fingertips. You can pull up Tribe Called Quest, Cypress Hill, De La Soul, Beastie Boys like this, but it seems to be going away.
Like I love the underground right now, but
you're killing it on the underground.
And at that time right now, it's like, you had to be so distinctively different. Everybody was so different. So different sound, different look, different style, different flows. But everybody coexisted and was just ill as fuck. You know what I mean? You couldn't be the same. You couldn't look the same, sound the same, dress the same. You was whack. You was a biter. And then that's what made the shit ill. And every time you heard an album, they reinvented the genre. You was like, what the fuck is this, yo?
Yeah.
When you heard Poison by G-Rap and then you know heard Set It Off by this motherfucker, and then you heard fucking Biz, and then you heard P.E., then you heard Slick Rick, then you heard Tribe. You was like, yo.
Yeah, you're right. What
the fuck's going on?
With
every album, though, motherfuckers was changed. They had the same energy, but the sound was different.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same record and the same album over and over. It's
very distinctive.
Yes.
Distinct. No disrespect. I love hip-hop no matter what. But nowadays you hear a song, and you go, which one is this? Which one of these singy rappers is this?
Well, that's what's sort of nice about this underground scene that Muggs has been so brilliant in and that I play on my show, is that a lot of these guys actually sound different. You know, your Boldy James sounds different. Gunn, Benny, and Conway all sound distinct.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Even in a group.
Yeah, even together.
Sound completely different.
Freddie Gibbs sounds different. Crime Apple's his own guy. Marcy, of course, is Marcy. I mean, it's hard to even put Marcy in a league with anyone else because he's sort of the godfather of this kind of the whole thing. Were you surprised? Have you been pleasantly surprised with sort of this run of underground, though, that there's so many good artists now who are able to put together a nice career and kind of benefit from streaming?
I love it. I love it. And I think this is something that a beautiful thing that streaming and like social media has brought to the game. You know, you see these gentlemen thriving in their 40s. When Chuck D, when he came out at 27, he was old as fuck. Cause he was 19. Prodigy was 19. Right. Rouse was 19. You know what I mean? Motherfuckers was young as fuck. 30, you didn't even think about having a career at 30 back then. You thought like, I'm not chilling no more. But to see this and to see the level of fucking expertise, you know what I mean? And creativism, like us, like it's a beautiful thing right now. But we have an outlet. We don't got to go through a label to say, this is the sound we're looking for. We don't got to go through a magazine saying, well, she's a little bit more of a legacy artist. He's older. We're not going to give him an article in the magazine.
Yeah.
Go direct to these people with 7 billion motherfuckers on this planet and tap into our people who dig us.
Yeah.
So it gave this whole thing a life. You know what I mean? And like, we make the music we want, how we want, with our middle fingers up, just like we did in the 90s.
Right. But the difference is,
he's very rich.
Well, yeah, the difference is he's very rich. But also, but even for like the more middle class rapper, In the 90s, they might have gotten their advance and made a little money for 5 seconds, but then they're dropped a year later and it's over. Now, if you just find your little niche, just enough of a niche, you're good. You can have yourself a nice, you may not be as rich as Muggs, but you can have yourself a nice life.
Have a good life.
You can have a nice life. So if there's a joint on this Muggs album right now, Soul Assassins 3, Death Valley. Let's hear what Sicilian Gold sounds like featuring Ghostface Killah and West Side Gun.
Solid gold bones made the thrones on his spaceship. Shade down opal to his flakes of dust. All white elephant, Ramadan, we iced the tusks. Linen this, linen that, everything's crushed. We send racks to our POs, nigga, we don't flush. We send racks to our POs, nigga, we don't flush. We send racks to our POs, nigga, we don't flush. Yeah. Hey, yo, in the outfit, 20 down, well. Tiffany up, fucking her loud. I'm the talk of the town, we up a circle eating bed.
Right up your alley. Right up my alley. This album, the new album has Boldy, Jay Worthy, this track here. You got Mayhem Loren, my guy Rome Streets. CeeLo Green is on here. Scarface and Freddie Gibbs on a record. Devin the Dude, Damo, Genesis, Evidence is on here. Marcy, Crime Apple. You've made a lot of dope music with Crime Apple.
Love Crime Apple.
Guys, he's
my boy.
Crime's really fucking cool,
yeah,
man.
Cool as fuck.
No, bro, everybody just wants... You ask, is it hard to get people on your shit?
Not really, man. Just call the homies. I'm like, we're working on some shit. Come through the lab. You know what I mean? But this wasn't... All these songs were just songs. When the homies come through, I just worked.
Right.
And at the end, I was like, all right, what am I going to do? I got another 50 songs. I was like, well, let me just figure out a project to put together. And I was actually going to release a song every 6 weeks for 2 years just to, like, you know, release it like that. Because I understand the
algorithm,
longevity of music and the way shit is now. It's like, let me just do it like this and release the vinyl later on. And Jason Goldwatch came through and I was like, man, I got all these songs. I'm trying to put a project out. I want to put something visually out, but I don't want to do a music video. What can we do for 15 minutes? That's a fucking big ask, homie. So he came up with some ideas. I was like, let's do all the ideas. And we ended up shooting a 34-minute film, which is sick.
It's the first
psychedelic hip-hop film. It's Pink Floyd meets Alejandro Jodorowsky on some hip-hop shit. So if you don't know what that is, Google that shit.
How are people going to consume this, the movie?
Right now, we taking it city to city and showing up.
Got a Blu-ray.
We did San Francisco 2 weeks ago. We did San Diego last week. We're doing Chicago in 2 weeks. And we've taken it like the Grindhouse films of the 70s where they only had one reel back then because it was expensive. So they would drive the reel city to city and play them on the weekends. You know, the two.
That's what Grindhouse means?
Well, Grindhouse was like the, there was a lot of the horror films and all the B-movies. Yeah. But they had one reel.
They would drive it around.
Drive it city to city. And you see the
and
two
the word
films.
Of mouth would just spread and it.
Eventually, by the time they took it across the state. So we're taking the city to city.
You're literally going to do that?
We've been doing it. Just building word of mouth organically, having a good time. That's part of the art piece of the whole rollouts. You know what I'm saying?
Right. YouTube.
It'll be on Amazon in the
and
next
And people
the
go to these
8 weeks.
How do people know about it?
I just hit it on Instagram one time and we did two screenings in Frisco, you know, 155 in each theater.
What?
So we did 300. We just did 200 in San Diego. We had to turn a couple hundred away.
It's
free.
I want to go.
I've been letting them in free.
It's free.
Free.
Just to let people experience it, hear the
music. Absolutely.
And you play the music in the movie?
We shot three music videos that we didn't release, but that you could only see them in the music video. I mean, in the movie. But the videos are on TV in the movie. So like in the trap house, when it's getting robbed, Mayhem's on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then Rock Marcy later on in the videos, he's a bomb builder. He's building a bomb. And the lights cut out and then the lights come back on. And all of a sudden I'm watching the video on the computer with the bomb in my hand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then the fucking cops come in to rob me. So it's mad psychedelic. So Jason Goldwatch is a fucking mastermind.
Wow, man.
What was the craziest era for Cypress Hill? Was it, and essentially for you, was it in the post Black Sunday era or was it all those years that followed? Like that whole next 5-7 years?
Probably before the first album when we was all running around wild and broke and just doing whatever we had to do. Like, you know, the late 80s, because the 80s was wild, man, from like 86 to 89, 90. And then the album came out. We was just broke, working hard, kids with a dream, man, figuring it out. Then after Black Sunday, that shit took off to another level. I don't think none of us was really ready for it. You don't know how to give like some... You know, you 20 years old and here's fucking $10 million and fucking here, go, tour, go. And we doing 150 shows.
And you stayed, you were always DJing on tour?
Absolutely.
All that time. Towards the end, I heard.
Well, I stopped around.
I heard this story. I don't remember from where, but I remember Mug saying, bro, I've seen the world 4 times already. Go ahead. I'm going to show.
Well, what I wanted to do is I for me, man, like, I like the unknown and the unexpected and the creativity.
Right,
going
right.
Going to the studio, you know, the show, you're doing the same show every night with the same songs in the same fucking order, doing the same shit. And this is pre-worldwide cell phones, and this is pre-the Euro.
Yeah.
This is pre-internet, you know, so touring was a little different back
then.
It was a little harder. And I just wanted to be in the lab. You know, I was over here, you know, making records and competing with Primo and RZA, and I just wanted to make beats and be in the lab and make heaters, you know, so I was just like, around 2000, I was like, I had my children and I was like, you know what? I'm going to raise my kids. And I had a lot of options, a lot of other things I could do. So I was like, I'm not going to go on the road no more.
And did Lethal go out? Who went out?
No, we sent a bunch of, Fred Reck out. We sent Julio G. Tony Touch went out for some shows. DJ Lord's on the road right now. Mixmaster Mike went out for a few years, like a few people.
Hey, I would do it.
Here and there.
Life, and Latino too. You fit right in. You can get down with
right
that.
In, man. There's never been a Puerto Rico.
You can open up with a comedy show too.
Yeah, you can do a little comedy routine.
Talk some shit.
Go for some people who don't know the history. Give me some of the people you've toured with. Because I know Cypress Hill, I mean, the run of
I'm going to assume Fugees, because you were on the same label.
We did a bunch of,
Smoking Grooves
with them.
I went to Smoking Grooves.
Rage Against the Machines, first tour they opened up for us. That's on the nice college tour, you know what I'm saying? Brought them out with us. We've done shows.
Beasties?
We did a whole tour with the Beasties. We would play with Metallica, Slayer, then the next night we'd be with Bjork and fucking Tricky and Massive Attack, you know what I mean? So...
Were you with Be Real had a spot in Juice, right?
No.
And I made that up. What movie?
Who's the Man?
Just Who's the Man?
Yeah.
Were you in it too?
No, I was in I think we did what's the one with what's his name? The comedian. Let me think of his name real quick. Tretch was in it too.
Another movie.
Robert Townsend's movie. Meteor Man.
Meteor
Man. This shit was dumb. Meteor Man. We was all in Meteor Man, yeah. That was like 91 probably.
Now, were you able to move around somewhat easily with Be Real sort of being the front-facing guy who would get the most attention? Were you able to sort of, because you seem like a background kind of guy who's not trying to be out there.
I was never trying to take a picture. If it was up to me, Cypress would have never took a picture.
You know what I mean? I'm sure everyone would have loved that at Columbia.
Columbia didn't like that. That's why it was like, you got to take pictures and show your face. Because I came from like in Rock and Roll Records. I came from like in, you know, like a fucking The Who, Led Zeppelin, Ozzy Osbourne, Jimmy. And like when you look at Led Zeppelin records, they was never on the cover.
Right.
And then there was this mystique to them. Like they left things open to your imagination to always wonder who were they. And you heard these folklores, you know, like they worked in this castle one time. Yeah, and they bought Aleister Crowley's house and they had this. And if you do this backwards, like this shit wasn't true. But you was like, yo, your imagination was going crazy. So I always wanted.
You want mystery.
And that's what it was back then, right? You want a mystery and intrigue. And let leave it up to your imagination because it's endless. Because once you read every article and you know about us, you on to the next.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that was my thing about it. It's just, it was that soap opera shit. You give them just enough, then they keep coming back, they keep fiending.
What was Sendog's presence like in studio for Cypress Hill? Obviously, we know him for like the memorable ad-libs and quick verses and things like that. But what did he contribute to the energy of Cypress Hill?
Sendog contributed actually what you just said, the energy, especially live and visually. You know what I mean? Because he was our big homie. He's like 3-4 years older than us. So in the hood, you know, that was Sendog. When we got on the records, man, Bira was always the best writer in Cypress. He was always the best writer. So, but Sen was the best performer early on. So, you know what I mean? So it was like Sen was a better performer. Bira was a better writer and boom. So it gelled well. There was just something. It was like, if you take one ingredient away from the group wasn't the group, didn't have its success, right? So it was like everybody played their role in the group. But it was always Bira writing. Bira wrote most of the shit. Sen wrote like, you know, his solo songs in the first record, but Bero wrote all the records.
Even if Sendog, he would write Sendog's parts?
By the second album, Bero wrote all Sendog's parts.
So by that point, Sendog was like, he was like, this guy's the guy.
He knew. Like, they would come together sometimes, like, and write together when they wrote dope shit together. But for the most part, Bero was just fast, and he just wrote. You know, the working flow was different back then. You did a record every 2 years. You were killing it. Like, that was big back then. Yeah. You know, it wasn't until, like, Pac started working faster than 50 in the mixtape game. Like,
yeah.
That's when the whole game changed. And people in the studios, you started seeing the change, you know, like writing a song like in fucking 20 minutes.
Right.
But if you got a song done in a day that you didn't have to rework on, you were killing it.
Killing it, yeah.
You guys have another album anniversary coming up, don't you? Or is it right now? I think it's 4.
Yeah, I think that was last a couple of days ago. I saw it on Twitter. 4.
I think 4. Yeah. That's how much shit you guys have.
Yo, unfortunately, I got to bounce.
All right, you know what, Sife?
Keep it going.
We're gonna keep it going. We're gonna do a little radio shot. We'll do a little thing for real late.
Thank you for everything.
Nothing but love and respect, thank my brother. Good to see you
personally, but musically, inspiration wise, everything you did for us, the hip hop world, the community. It means everything, man. That shit.
Same, bro. Oof. I miss those tunnel days, homie.
The tunnel days, man. He was in the tunnel.
The scrambling days. Yeah.
And shout out to all the white weddings I've DJed where Jump Around is by far the biggest song.
Well, no, you must really hit that Sife on your, like, when you're doing the fucking Burt Kreischer shows and shit in front of 20,000 people.
Jump Around is it.
Is it a fail-safe record?
For sure.
So this is, you put Jump Around on the list of no matter what the event is.
Break glass in case of emergency.
You got it. Like, all right, let's set this thing off.
Jump Around is shit. I don't know what to, this is not working, this is not working. Let's just go right to it. Then I play the Pete Rock one and everyone throws ice at me.
What the fuck is this jazzy shit? All right, Sife, later. So what were you doing in those in-between years? Like, would you still pop out and do things with Cypress Hill?
Yeah, I would do Cypress. And then for 2 years, I worked with this South African group called Die Antwoord. You know, I'm a big-ass group from over there. I worked with them for 2 years and produced their albums. And I was doing just different shit. I would still do hip-hop shit, like one record a year. You know, we did GZA, Planet
Asia.
GZA, Planet Asia, Ill Bill, all those records. But like I said, the workflow was a little different back then. You know, a record a year was doing your thing. You know what I mean? But I would always make beats and do different kind of shit and explore. I put an electronic album out for fun. I was listening to electronic and I was like, how do they do this shit? Like this kind of production. So I went in and did a bunch of songs, put that out and just to do some different shit to clean my palate. Then I came back and I linked up with May probably in like 15.
Mayhem Loren.
Yeah, me and Mayhem. And then 17, we dropped our first album, Gems of the Equinox.
Yeah, I forgot. So even that
and
period.
And that's when I really linked with Rock, you know, like again, it's like 16, we did that song and then we dropped our shit in 18.
Right. And May's connected to Rock. Everything's kind of connected from there. How did you discover a young alchemist?
So originally how he was brought to me, my manager said, yo, I got this. You want to make a lot of money. And I said, what do you got up your sleeve, motherfucker? He's like, oh, I got this little rap group, two little white boys from Beverly Hills. And I was like, man, get the fuck out of here with that bullshit. And so they brought it. They brought it to Be Real, and Be Real worked with them, and they did the hooligan shit. They had a bunch of
Be Real was like, all right, I'm done. I see what this could be.
Yeah, a couple of dudes, I think T-Ray and Lethal and a few other young cats produced them.
Well, shouts to T-Ray.
But
man,
when I met Al, he was like 14. I was like, this little motherfucker's cool as fuck. But he's smart, but he reminds me of me. He's hungry. But I was like, he just needs the exposure to be around this shit and just like, you know, just a little bit of fucking
tutelage.
And, you know, he's one of them motherfuckers. Whatever he wanted to do, he's smart as fuck. He was going to be successful. So, you know, him just having, you know, being able to tap in and being inside with one of the biggest groups in the world and traveling with us and being in the studio and being on tour, he just sat back and took notes. You know what I mean? And I introduced him to the premiere on the Smoking Grooves and, you know, I introduced him to the Infamous Mob and how he actually met Prodigy.
That's how he met Prodigy?
Yeah.
Wow, bro.
And then, you know, I hired Paul Rosenberg as my manager for Cypress in 2020, you know, and brought Paul into the thing. That's how he met, get the connection with Paul and Eminem, you know what I'm saying? So.
Wow. Hold on. I got to stop and process this. So even with all the amazing things that you're sort of at the center of, you introduced Al and Prodigy. That alone is a gift.
I brought Al in. I introduced him to the Infamous Mob, but Prodigy came into the session. I didn't say his.
Oh, got it.
So I was like, yo, these are the little homies. I'm doing a record with them. So go into the lab with them, do some shit with them. And then that's how he met him. Prodigy came in and they did Thug Music, which was supposed to be for Soul Assassins too. And Al hit me one day. He was like, yo, P wants this for the album. Yo, this would be good for my career. Can I keep this one? I was like, yeah, keep that motherfucker. Boom, go get it. Then he just linked with the Mob. You know what I mean?
Wow. And that, and of course that was such a defining part of Al's career. And I mean, Al and Prodigy are one of the great tandems of all time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, when you really think about it, the two of those guys have such a chemistry with each other.
Amazing. Amazing. They both locked in. Al works like an animal. I don't think I've ever seen a human work like Al to this day. He's in the studio at 5:30 in the morning. I mean, work till 8 or 9, take a half an hour nap, get up, work, go have lunch, come back later, take a 3-hour nap, work all day, 24 hours. You don't sleep, man.
You got to be immensely proud of what Al has become. Huh?
Amazing, bro. It's the greatest thing ever.
He really is one of the greats.
Yeah,
the greats of all time.
Absolutely.
Shouts to Alan.
Shout out Alchemist.
Yo, shout out to Muggs for coming through. Man, we have a lot more we can do over time. There's more conversations to be
absolutely,
had.
Absolutely, brother.
And I don't imagine that you plan on stopping with the music.
Oh, never. That's what we do.
So, yeah, I mean, you don't have any...
Man, look, I seen this picture of Picasso about 15 years ago, and he was in his prime in his 70s in a loft in Italy with about 25 paintings on the wall. And I was like, oh, that's what we're going to do. You know what I mean? This is art. We just do this shit. It's fun. We got to get it out.
So. And by the way, and you don't know when you're going to be the best version of yourself.
Nah, I'm not even in my prime yet.
That's what I'm saying.
Figuring it out still, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And to be able to just do this shit just because I feel like doing it, I don't got to do it to pay the rent or for money. Ain't trying to get famous or nothing. I'm just trying to do what I feel like doing.
That's a great, bro. That's
when
the
I
dream.
Feel like doing it. You know what I mean? So we're living the dream over here, baby. You know what I mean? Dreams do come true, motherfuckers. Don't quit, bitch ass motherfuckers.
All right, we out.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.